Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The White House is calling this Made in America Week. President Trump jumped in a U.S.-made fire truck yesterday, swung a U.S.-made baseball bat, U.S.-made golf clubs. Next up, very possibly new U.S.-made tariffs on imported steel on national security grounds. The beleaguered U.S. steel industry is very, very happy at the thought. American manufacturers who rely on cheap steel are very nervous. And many of the country's allies whose steel we import are flat-out mad, promising to hit back. This hour on Point, is President Trump willing to start a global trade war over U.S. steel? You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Is this the way to make America great again, to generate American manufacturing jobs? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. April 20th, President Trump signed an order to launch an investigation against exporters of cheap steel into U.S. markets.
Today, I'm directing the Department of Commerce to immediately prioritize the investigation. It began yesterday and really long before that, because Wilbur and I have been working on this for a long time, into foreign steel arriving into our markets, and to submit a report on the effects of these foreign steel products on the national security of the United States. It's not just the pricing, it's not just employment. It also has to do with the national security of our country.
National security. Keep that phrase in mind. That means the Trump administration could pull out the big guns on this. That was April, just last week, July 9th, talking with Chris Wallace on Fox News. White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus responded to questions about the president's plans to impose sanctions on foreign steel. Again, the national security argument.
There's also a national security piece to this, and American people need to understand. If a country loses its ability to produce steel, it loses something in regard to national security. A country cannot find itself importing steel from China, subjected to dumping of steel from other countries, decreasing
productivity.
But this is an important issue, not just for trade, not just for the American worker, but for national security.
But you're making the argument that, yes, he's going to impose tough restrictions on steel imports.
My guess is that he will, because he promised that he would.
He will. He promised that he would. Lots of businesses pushing back. On Friday, Reuters reporter Ginger Gibson explained why American businesses, many of them, have been quietly pushing the White House not to go with the steel tariffs. Here she was.
Businesses are pushing back because they think tariffs will increase their costs and therefore make them cut back production, cutting jobs, and make the price of products that they produce more expensive for consumers. We see everyone from manufacturers, oil refiners, automakers, to retailers who use steel in all of their shelves.
Steel is in an awful lot of products. The price of it matters. We're going to hear later in this hour from the president of the United Steelworkers Union, international president, Leo Girard, North America's largest manufacturing union. He's for it. He's for doing something and maybe doing this. But first, for the background here, joining me from Washington is Anna Swanson, reporter at the Washington Post covering the economy and trade. She wrote a piece Friday headlined, "Trump Team is Ready for a Trade War Over Steel." You can link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. Anna Swanson, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
What do you mean they're ready for a trade war over steel?
Well, so that piece was based on a meeting. It was a closed-door meeting that Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross had with the Senate Finance Committee. But we stood outside and, you know, tried to gather as much information as we could. And, you know, what we heard from that meeting was that, you know, Wilbur Ross is pretty determined to do something, and that the president is definitely focused on taking some kind of action to help out U.S. steel producers. It's still unclear what that action would look like, whether it would be tariffs or quotas or some kind of combination. But, you know, it's clear that they do see Chinese overcapacity as a real issue, and that they would like to try to address that through their actions. And, you know, Ross was aware, from what we heard in the meeting, of the risk of retaliation and that this measure could, you know, effectively start a trade war. But he felt like the, you know, making this kind of action was necessary in order to bring other countries to the negotiating table.
Describe the backdrop to us, Anna. I mean, China built up enormous steelmaking capacity when its economy was white hot. Its economy slowed down. That meant it had a whole lot of steel production. A lot of that went abroad. But they don't export so much directly to the United States. I mean, there are already some kind of agreements or restrictions on that front. So how does Chinese overcapacity end up, if it does, hurting the U.S. steel industry?
That's exactly right. So China produces about half of the world's steel, a really stunning amount.
Wow.
And most of that capacity was built, you know, in the past decades as its economy was growing and there was a lot of demand for steel as well. The problem, U.S. steelmakers say, is that China's steel companies are state-owned, and so they don't need to respond to market signals. So as demand has dropped for that steel, Chinese companies have kept pumping it out, you know, regardless of falling demand. And basically, you know, that has brought down the global price of steel. So because, you know, because of this risk from China, the U.S. has actually put up a lot of barriers in the past years to imports of Chinese steel. And right now, China only ranks 11th in terms of the countries that the U.S. imports steel from. We import about a third of our steel. And so that's a pretty small amount coming from China. But U.S. steelmakers argue that because China is reducing the global price of steel, they're still feeling that effect anyway from Chinese overcapacity. So it's kind of a tricky issue, you know, and that is one thing that critics say. It's not clear that, you know, just by putting up tariffs on global steel, whether the U.S. administration will really be able to target Chinese overcapacity. They say that, you know, a more effective measure would be working with other countries to reduce that overcapacity from China.
And
but
the immediate target would be allies, not China, right? I mean, we're talking, where does most of our steel come from? Who would feel the heat if we do this?
That's exactly right. So as I said, we import a third of our steel. The largest source of that steel comes from Canada, about 17% of our imported steel. After that, we have a lot coming from Brazil, South Korea, Mexico, Japan, Germany, a lot of countries that are close U.S. allies. And China is, you know, way down on the list. You know, but as I was going to say, you know, it seems like the administration feels like they simply don't have, you know, any other good options to address Chinese overcapacity and that what they've been able to do so far is not effective.
So they're talking about pulling out this kind of nuclear option on the trade front, which is to say new tariffs potentially and imposed on the grounds of a national security threat. Why is that so controversial?
That's right. So the national security provision is important because the Trump administration is doing this under a specific trade law that gives them really wide authority to act unilaterally. On trade, the president doesn't really need Congress's approval anyway. But this law, which is called Section 232, if the administration finds that imports threaten U.S. national security, the administration can impose, you know, kind of whatever trade restrictions it would like to, and there's no time limit. And it's really important because the World Trade Organization, which you know, helps to monitor and settle disputes between countries on trade, gives countries a lot of latitude when it comes to dealing with national security issues. The WTO hasn't really wanted to meddle in what countries, determine to be their own national security and wants to kind of leave that up to them. And so, you know, this ability to make trade restrictions based on national security hasn't really been tested very much at the WTO. If the U.S. does do something like this, it's likely that other countries would bring cases to the WTO. And then we'd find out, you know, either does the WTO have some kind of view on national security, which some in the U.S. might view as infringing on national sovereignty, or is there just kind of a big gaping hole in international trade trade law, where countries can basically do whatever they want to on the grounds of national security.
So you could end up with World Trade Organization authorities in Geneva, Switzerland, ruling on what Wilbur Ross is Donald Trump's assertion that this is a national security threat to the United States. We can just imagine how that would go down. I mean, we had, what, 180,000 jobs or so in steel in 1980, maybe 85,000 today. How much of those have been lost to foreign competition? How much to automation, Anna?
Right. So that's another big issue. You know, I believe most economists would say that automation has been the bigger factor in that. You know, the steel industry is an incredibly capital-intensive industry today. It's something, you know, where most of these companies are investing in very complex machinery. And as you walk around mills like these, you know, you mostly see this very expensive machinery and not too many workers. Of course, you know, unions defend this by saying that these are really good jobs. They're jobs that you can support a family on, and that having steel is important to the U.S. American-made steel is important to the U.S. economy, that steel is the backbone of a lot of industry. And those, you know, concerns, of course, we have to take into account when thinking about this.
If this would go to trade war, and it's being threatened already when we've heard out of Europe, where would that likely begin to hit? What kind of countermeasures might we anticipate?
That's really interesting. If you look at past examples and what countries, other countries are talking about doing today, you realize that they are incredibly strategic when it comes to retaliation and targeting U.S. products. So the Europeans have talked about, you know, if the U.S. imposes some kind of steel tariffs, they would answer back by restricting U.S. agriculture. Agriculture is one of the biggest exports for the United States, and it also is extremely important, of course, to the Midwest, which was an important base of support for Trump. And we've also seen other examples of countries trying to kind of target strategic areas, states that are represented by important people, you know, whether it's Kentucky bourbon as an effort to perhaps influence Mitch McConnell, or Florida oranges, which is an important swing state.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about trade and the Trump administration, in particular new tariffs on imported steel that may be right around the corner. We're looking at U.S. manufacturing and warnings of global trade retaliation if those tariffs go through. Anna Swanson is with us, reporter with the Washington Post, who's been all over this. Her headline on her Friday piece, Trump's team is ready for a trade war over steel. You can join us this hour. Can you see yourself getting a job in a revived U.S. steel factory? Will tariffs, more expensive steel, help or hurt your business? Help or hurt the U.S. auto industry, other industries that use steel? Are tariffs the way to give the U.S. a jobs jolt here? Leo Gerard of the United Steelworkers is with us. Chad Bown from Peterson Institute will join us in just a moment. Donald Trump has been talking about this a lot on the campaign trail, and recently here he was in Pennsylvania, June of last year, vowing his administration would use American steel for American infrastructure.
Just like the American steel from Pennsylvania that built the Empire State Building. That's what we're going to do. It built the Empire State Building. It will be American steel that will fortify America's crumbling bridges. American steel. It will be American steel. It will be American steel that sends our skyscrapers soaring, soaring into the sky. Beautiful sight. More beautiful with American steel.
Of course, you've got people pointing to Trump Towers made with foreign steel. But, hey, that's another issue. The president is on this at a rally just, June 7th this year, at the opening of a coal mine in Freedons, Pennsylvania. He told the crowd his administration would take measures very soon to stop foreign firms selling steel in the U.S. at artificially low prices.
Wait till you see what I'm going to do for steel and for your steel companies. We're going to stop the dumping and stop all of these wonderful other countries from coming in and killing our companies and our workers. You'll be seeing that very soon. The steel folks are going to be very happy.
Okay, whole world is watching. Here's the EU Trade Commissioner, Cecilia Malmström, saying last month in Brussels that she shares concerns about China's cheap steel, and we will look at that, but that if the U.S. imposes tariffs, she said it will hit the EU very hard to protect themselves. Allied countries who export steel to the U.S., she said the EU would have to strike back.
We will have to respond, and we have, of course, expressed our concerns to the U.S. administration, both from the European institutions, myself, and I know many other countries, especially the steel-producing countries, have. So we will have to see what is in this legislation, of course. But yes, somehow we will have to react. But yeah, that we will see afterwards. Yeah.
Okay, it's not a legislation. It would just come from the White House, from the Trump administration, and they have the power to do it. Anna Swanson with The Washington Post. Please stand by there in Washington. Leo Gerard joins us right now from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, International President of the United Steelworkers. It's North America's largest manufacturing union. Leo Gerard, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us. What do you think the president ought to do on steel?
Well, good to be with you. First of all, let me correct some of the both the language and the facts from both you and the previous speaker. We're in a trade war now, period, end of story. The fact of the matter is that if we just deal with the steel industry, the steel companies 10 years ago produced about 125 to maybe 130 million tons of steel.
Yep.
Now we produce about 85 million tons of steel. And a large part of that erosion of the capacity to make steel in America has been done and been reduced by China's efforts. And it's not just that what China sends to our country. It's what China sends to other countries that will transform that and circumvent existing trade laws. For example, China sends steel to South Korea, and South Korea creates oil country tubular goods in South Korea.
Yep.
South Korea doesn't have any oil country tubular drilling in South Korea. That whole market is designed by China and South Korea to attack the American market. In let's say that 12 years ago, China produced a little bit more steel than America produced. At the end of 2015, 2016 might be a bigger number, but China produced over a billion tons of steel.
Wow.
The Chinese overcapacity in steel relative to what they consume is equivalent to somewhere between 400 and 500 million tons of steel. That's more steel than the United States, Canada, Brazil, Europe, Japan, South Korea together.
You say it's trade war now. Do you see it as a national security issue now?
Let me finish.
I will.
The thing that's been going on is that we've had to file between the union and the industry over 200 trade cases, and we've succeeded in the overwhelming majority of those trade cases because China's business model, and primarily China's business model, is based on cheating. And so that when we have to enforce trade laws on a continuous basis against those that cheat and play unfair, for those whiners that whine that if we had to increase the price of steel, that would hurt their business, the question is really, do we want American manufacturing to survive based on steel that is done by cheating and not following the normal business practices?
Are you calling the U.S. auto industry whiners in that case?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That if you factor in what's going to go into an auto industry with regards to a pound of steel, it's a negligible increase in their cost. In fact, there's more steel that goes into a wind turbine than goes into an automobile. And
well, of course. I mean, they're huge.
One of the things that we should be looking at is that Secretary Ross is looking at is for companies to play by the rules. We can match any company in the world on steel. We can't beat every country in the world. And the countries that are the most egregious at cheating are China, South Korea, Japan, India, and the countries that are basically operating on a level playing field are the Europeans, are the Canadians. And, for example, you make the reference of, about the amount of steel that Canada sends to the U.S.
Yep.
The U.S. has a trade surplus with Canada. The U.S. sends more steel to Canada than Canada sends to the U.S.
So do you think it's time to drop this hammer of Section 232, the National Security Clause here, and say, boom, tariffs, and we do it on national security grounds, and that's that?
Well, I think that it's not going to be as clear-cut as that. I think that you're going to look at various products. And when we talk about national security, it's not just tanks and airplanes, et cetera. It's the water treatment centers. It's our roads. It's our bridges. And, you know, I can give you an example of a bridge that tried to take a shortcut with Chinese steel, the Bay Bridge from San Francisco to Oakland. That bridge was over 6 years delayed and over $3 billion over budget because the Chinese couldn't make the right accounts of steel. And during the Arnold Schwarzenegger regime, they went to buy the what so-called cheap steel from China. It ended up doubling and tripling the cost of that. My last point, and then I'll stop, is that there's been five different sessions over the last 12 years where the United States has met with China on a high-level discussion about Chinese overcapacity. Each one of those meetings, China committed, promised to reduce their capacity because they knew they were undermining the global steel manufacturing and global steel prices. During those five times, they went from producing 200 million tons to 1.2 billion tons. Don't tell me that that's an accident. That's a defined strategy by China to undermine world prices in steel, to undermine the capacity of other nations to produce steel. And they're not only exporting steel, they're exporting unemployment. And so that I'm very, very, very supportive of what Secretary Ross is trying to do. And again, I would say that a stabilizing the steel market globally is not going to add any meaningful cost to anything. We did this with a 201 petition under President Bush, and the 201 petition was a blanket imposition on all steel companies all around the world, and prices of steel didn't move an inch, and the economy continued to run forward. So we're using the wrong language and the wrong set of facts.
Leo Gerard, International President of the United Steelworkers, please stand by there. I want to really get into this. And Anna Swanson with the Washington Post, stand by. Chad Bown is with us, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics, joins us from Washington. Mr. Bown, Leo Gerard says, look, the Chinese are cheating. We're in a trade war already. We need to take exactly this kind of measure. It is a national security issue. What do you see?
Well, I think there's a couple of important points to make. The first is, you know, there are a number of problems that we do currently face in the United States that we have to get out there. One is, you know, the problem of ongoing manufacturing job loss and suffering in workers, including in steel workers across the country. But the second also is a concern with China and the overcapacity issue that that Mr. Gerard noted. You know, China, as Ms. Swanson noted as well, has increased their capacity from about a third 10, 12 years ago of the world's production to now roughly half. And they're not working under market-oriented rules. So, you know, those are the facts, and that's unequivocal. The main question and I think issue of concern that we face today, however, is how we're going to deal with that and the concerns that the Trump administration is actually pushing forward by using this national security law when there's lots of other more appropriate types of trade policy responses that the administration could undertake.
Why is that such a big deal, pushing the national security response?
Well, primarily because it's a red herring.
I mean, Leo says honestly, it is national security, you know, all the way down to water plants and the Bay Bridge.
Well, I agree that steel is important for many, many areas of the U.S. economy, including roads and bridges and water treatment plants. But as Mr. Gerard also said, most of the steel that we import is not from China. We mostly import it from our allies in Canada, in Japan, in Europe, in Mexico. And if we're actually going to stop imports from coming in, which is what President Trump is threatening, those are the countries from whom the imports are going to stop. Those are the countries that are going to be hurt by this action. And thus, it's ultimately going to hurt our allies. The main concern that I have with the national security argument, though, is a bit broader than even the steel issue.
Okay.
Is once the United States goes down this path of invoking this exception, it really gives license to any country, anywhere around the world, at any moment in time, for any product to be able to say, you know what, something that we import from you, that's a threat to our national security. So, for example, right now the United States exports $14, $15 billion a year in soybeans to China, agricultural products to China. China might say, you know what, we're really pretty heavily reliant on you for our food supply, for the feed for our animals. That's a threat to our national security. So we want to stop those imports from coming in, hurting farmers in, you know, Iowa and across the Midwest. And you can think of many other examples like that as well. A country saying, ah, you know, Boeing aircraft, we're buying a lot of those from you right now, but that's a threat to our national security. Maybe we'll start buying Airbus instead. And so this just becomes an extremely slippery slope. And this is not to say that there aren't problems in the steel industry. There aren't problems with global overcapacity. It's just that this particular path that the president and Secretary Ross are choosing to go down with this national security argument really opens up a Pandora's box that creates major concerns for international trade that spill way beyond the steel industry.
Leo Gerard, I'll bring that to you, but Anna Swanson first. Do you see in this? I mean, Leo says, look, we've had five big meetings with the Chinese, which are supposed to deal with this overcapacity, and yet it's grown and grown, a billion plus million tons now. And that, yes, this is a severe step, but maybe this would bring ultimately China to the table to talk about that capacity issue there that's beneath all of this. Can you see that, and do people buy that?
Well, I mean, from my understanding, how the argument has been explained to me by people who, you know, support this measure is that it is a little bit of a roundabout effect. You know, I mean, they admit that this measure would put a lot of pressure on our allies, and that those, you know, those countries would then have to come together to pressure China to reduce its overcapacity. So it is a little bit of a one-two-step problem. It, you know, Mr. Gerard mentioned the issue of Chinese steel being routed through other countries. Secretary Ross, in that meeting with senators that I talked about at the top of the program, reportedly identified countries like Russia, Ukraine, South Korea, and Vietnam as worrying conduits for Chinese steel. So these measures could, you know, directly affect those countries that might be serving as conduits. But as Mr. Brown suggested, they would also affect a lot of other, could also affect a lot of other countries as well.
I mean, Leo Gerard, you're the head of the Steelworkers Union, but I'm looking here at a headline that says this tariff could put the economy on a path to global recession. That's from Business Insider. I mean, that wouldn't help steel business, would it?
Look, it's a whole bunch of fear-mongering. Most of this is just, as Joe Biden would say, it's malarkey. I come back to the point I made that under the Bush administration, in President Bush's first term, he brought in an all-encompassing 201 petition, and that didn't move prices extremely. That didn't add cost to anybody. What it did was stabilize the steel market, the steel industry, for a few years. And then China started, and with those are the dates that ring true. Right around that time, China started to strategically increase with a long-term plan to dominate the world industry in steel, even if they didn't follow traditional business models. And when you're at 1.2 billion tons of steel, and you've got 500 million tons of overcapacity, let me remind you again that that's more steel than Europe, Canada, Brazil, Russia, India, Japan, South Korea produce. So you can't get away from the fact that the current trade laws don't work. China's been getting away with this stuff. And you can add another piece to it. The trade laws don't work and the trade agreements don't work when Carrier, who is a big user of steel, takes its plant and moves it to Monterrey, Mexico, to make furnaces. Mexicans aren't going to buy many furnaces, but they move their facilities there because they could pay $3.90 a day versus 15 or 20 bucks an hour.
So, but what do you want then? Do you want to order all foreign steel out and order all American manufacturers to stay here? What happens to the whole free trade idea?
I think what we've got is we've got a study by the Secretary of Commerce and his people looking into the effects of unfairly traded dump steel into America's national security. And you don't hear anybody talking about, in any real term, you don't hear the Secretary of Commerce, you don't hear him talking about dump steel from Europe, you don't hear him talking about dump steel from Canada. What you hear him talking about is stopping the illegal trade in steel with circumvention that I referred to, that the reporter just referred to, with the fact that China has a long-term policy long-term policy of eroding the ability of the American steel industry to compete. And we went, as I said, during this time that China has flooded the markets, we went from producing 125 to 130 million tons of steel to 85 million. If you're China, you're saying our long-term strategy is working. And with that effect, we're not having the capacity to make enough steel for our roads and bridges, for our water infrastructure, for our
Leo Gerard, hold the thought if you'd be kind enough there in Pittsburgh. We have to take a short break right here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about trade and the Trump administration in particular. New tariffs being imposed on imported steel that may be right around the corner from the Trump administration. We're looking at U.S. manufacturing and warnings of global trade retaliation if those tariffs go through. Leo Gerard is with us, international president of the United Steelworkers. Anna Swanson is here, reporter at the Washington Post, covering all this. Her headline on Friday, Trump's team is ready for a trade war over steel. Chad Bown is with us from the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Leo Gerard says talk of a global recession, retaliation coming out of this, malarkey, fear-mongering. The president in April, here he was talking about Made in America. This is Made in America week out of the White House. That's the big headline. He says, well, that's the way to go.
Together, we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that more products are stamped with those wonderful words, Made in the USA. I'm proud to announce that we are about to take bold new steps to follow through on my pledge to buy American and hire American.
Okay, well, Washington Post, Annie, your paper reporting last week on all the countries that his products and Ivanka Trump's products come from, Bangladesh, Indonesia, Vietnam, China, Mexico. But we're talking about steel today. But, I mean, with that fully in mind, steel makers, here's a steel worker in Granite City, Illinois, says foreign steel dumping is a big problem. The U.S. steel plants could compete. He talked to Reuters last Thursday.
We can compete against any of these other countries if we level the playing field, and that seems to be the problem. You know, the price of hot band steel right now is at a price that we could be profitable. It's just that we lack the volume and the orders, and those orders are being replaced by lower cost imported steel.
The voice of the steel worker right there, Chad Bown in Washington. Leo Gerard says warnings of big retaliation or global recession coming out of this are fear-mongering. It's malarkey. What do you say?
Well, I think to Mr. Gerard's point about the earlier episodes in which we have seen this same sort of activity happen, and so he referred back to 2001, 2002, when the George W. Bush administration imposed this trade Section 201 law on steel. That is what I would argue is what we should be doing, not using this bogus national security exception, but just saying there's too much steel in the world right now. Maybe we need to temporarily put a brake on imports, but let's go through the proper channels in doing so. Every 10 years or so, this happens. This happened in 2002. It happened in the early 1990s. It happened in the 1980s. This is a recurring theme in the steel industry. But what's really different this time around is President Trump seems to be choosing an extreme path with how to deal with it. And I think that's the biggest concern.
Yes, Leo Gerard.
Yeah, let me just say with all due respect to the speaker that he's right to the extent that the 201 was a good tool at the time. But since the 201, this is the point I want to make, since the 201, Chinese steel overproduction, deliberate overproduction, went from roughly producing the same amount of steel as America to producing 1.2 billion tons of steel. America went from producing 130 million tons of steel to 85 million tons of steel. It proves that the existing formula of filing trade cases doesn't work. We have been a party with employers to over 200 trade cases, the overwhelming majority against China. We've won probably 90% of them. And when we win the case, China finds a different way to have a diversion or to move that steel to another country. And that other country then starts to have a surplus with us of sending some product that used to come from China. The most egregious ones are Russia and South Korea, where I mentioned that South Korea has oil country tubular goods.
Yeah.
and doesn't drill one inch in their own country, but they're making it with Chinese steel and sending it to us. And so now we have to file a case not only against China, but against South Korea. And so this continuous erosion of the steel industry based on the ability of China in particular, but not just China, Russia and others, to use circumvention to get out from under needs to be brought to an end. When the other reporter said that there needs to be a global discussion, there's been five global discussions, and in each one of those, China made a promise that they broke. The WTO and the G8 or the G20 have all had steel forums, and none of those steel forums has resulted in any reduction in China's capacity.
Yeah. Leo, I want to take it to our callers. Anna Swanson, real quick to you. I mean, does this blow up the WTO? Everybody starts pulling out the national security complaint. Steel's a big deal. Leo Gerard says it hasn't worked. It is a national security issue. He's suggesting China has a deliberate strategy here to undermine production elsewhere and totally dominate. You know, those are big stakes on the table. I mean, does this blow up the WTO regime if this starts to, if we go down this road?
I mean, that is the big question and, you know, the fear for some economists. The Trump administration has, sometimes discounted the role of the WTO in general and preferred to deal with issues like this on a national level. So, you know, for people who see the WTO as a really useful organization, there's the fear that, you know, maybe they're discounting the importance of that organization. I did want to add, too, that, you know, when we talk about the risk of retaliation and other downstream industries kind of complaining about what the effects of the steel tariffs would be. I mean, you also have, you know, extremely prominent economists coming out last week, 15 economists who had served as the former chair of the President's Council of Economic Advisors.
Including for both Bush advisors and Obama.
Right. Yep. Republican and Democratic administrations. Yep. Every living former director of this council, going back to the Reagan administration, including Alan Greenspan and Ben Bernanke, sending a joint letter to the administration warning that these tariffs could be disastrous for the global trading system and for U.S. agriculture in particular. So I think that, you know, the concerns about retaliation or other economic effects are very valid.
That's pretty high-level pushback. I want to get our callers in from around the country. Tim in Detroit. Thank you for calling, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi. I used to work in a factory, and automation wiped out our jobs for everybody, all sexes, all races. Now there's so much gang violence in Detroit and Chicago and everywhere else because these young people don't have decent jobs.
Yep.
I think it's Walter Reuther who said the best crime fighter is a good job. Student loans are a hardship for middle-class people, what's left of the middle class, let alone the poor.
So what should happen here, Tim?
Pardon me?
What should happen here?
Okay, well, when I was growing up in my prime in the 60s and 70s, 99% of the stuff was made in the USA. We had tariffs, and so you paid a little bit more, but the streets were a lot safer. And maybe that's not such a bad thing. I'm not a big Trump supporter, but this thing, maybe he's got, if he continues on with what he says he's going to do, possibly in this case, he might be right.
If automation wiped out your job, Tim, is automation going to stop here?
No. I said it was not automation.
Oh, excuse me. Okay.
NAFTA and all the bad trade deals. Automation does wipe out jobs, but, I went to, like, communist Vietnam, and let's call China what it is, communist China. And they hack, all of the secrets of the businesses and the government and all that. These are our friends. I mean, let's try and get along, but let's use common sense.
Tim, we've got it. Chad Bounley, would you respond to that? I mean, Tim has looked at the experience of his lifetime and what's happened and saying, well, maybe Mr. Trump is correct here.
So I empathize with Tim's experience, and there are certainly some folks who lose their jobs because of globalization, increased trade. But I'll disagree and say that, you know, the vast majority of job loss is much more likely to be due to automation, technology, people changing what they want. And the policy response that the Trump administration thinks that if we just erect trade barriers, that jobs are going to come back, even if the manufacturing comes back, is just not true. They're going to, you know, companies now make things with computers and robots and technology in ways that we didn't in the past. And to work in those types of facilities, it's also a different type of worker. You have to be a highly skilled worker with lots of training, computers. So the right policy response is not to do nothing, but it's also not trade policy. It's to develop better labor market adjustment policies, retraining policies, education policies, adjustment to help workers move into the sectors that are growing in the economy, maybe sometimes to, you know, have to leave Detroit. If that's not an area that's growing, maybe we need to rethink our mobility policies as well to help get workers to the areas of the economy geographically that are booming and growing. So there are public policy work that needs to get done by the Trump administration. But my sense is it's not trade. And trade is really a red herring if it thinks it's going to solve these problems.
Leo Gerard, this won't bring the jobs back. It'll just be automation and still people without jobs.
Look, that's again partly true, but mostly untrue. Let me gain a better historical perspective. When President Bush, promoted by President Clinton, promoted PNTR, normalized trade relations with China, we went from having roughly a balanced trade agenda with China to now running close to a $400 billion per year trade in manufactured, what they call hard goods, with China. We lost 60,000 factories following the 2008 economic collapse. You can track most of those factories to closures because of China and Mexico and India and Japan and South Korea. If you look at our trade deal with South Korea, we had a balanced trade deal with South Korea at the time. Now we've got a trade deficit of almost $100 billion a year. If you look at our trade deficit with Mexico, again, prior to NAFTA, it was a balanced trade agenda. Mexican workers' wages were closer to American workers' wages. American workers' wages have stayed stagnant. Mexican wages have fallen. And we're losing jobs to Mexico. And so the reality is there's no such thing as free trade. It's a misnomer. All trade is regulated. And it's on whose behalf is it being regulated by? And I want to make the point again with Carrier that is so vivid.
This is where Donald Trump went in Indiana, where he made a big deal about the jobs that he would save there.
Yeah, which he didn't. And that the reality is that wages at Carrier were in the $20 per hour range, which is you can raise a family on it, but you're not going to get rich. Carrier closed that furnace manufacturing facility in America and moved it to Mexico. They're now going to make furnaces in Mexico. Where are those furnaces going to go? Mexicans don't need many furnaces. Those furnaces are going to get imported back into America. And what they're going to do is they're going to maximize their profit on that by using trade laws that don't work for ordinary folks. And so I understand in the steel industry we can make steel at less than 2 man-hours per ton. A large part of that is because of technology. A large part of that is because the highly skilled workers, if you're an operator in a steel mill, you get more training than a 747 pilot. We understand that and we support it because in order to stay in the game, you've got to be an efficient producer. But you can't be an efficient producer when a country that uses steel at 10 and 15 and 20 man-hours per ton simply will dump its stuff into our market so that they can get currency and so they can have a long-term strategy of eroding our ability to compete on the world market in steel.
Leo, we've got more callers here. Let me get to them. Middlebury, Vermont, Lori is calling. We're hearing no such thing as free trade from the head of the Steelworkers Union. Lori, what do you see?
So I have a very limited global economic perspective. But as far as the WTO and the free trade, I was thinking we can't be the first country to act out of self-interest and sound economic policy. This can't be a new phenomenon. And then the other part of it was domestically, is there a double standard here? We have the auto industry, you know, telling everyone to buy American, but then they're not happy about having to pay for American steel. And lastly, what just recently came up between your callers, if these are manufacturing jobs that are to be had, it kind of looks like those manufacturing jobs are in low-paying places, Mexico, China, where they're not possibly investing in the education of those workers. So do we want those jobs?
Laurie, we've got it. Chad Bown, no such thing as free trade, Leo Gerard says, the union boss.
So I think this gets to this underlying issue of, you know, there is a tension and a conflict right now that we face because of the role and emergence of especially China in the global economy. And that is something that the United States has to deal with Europe, with Canada, with Japan. China is just very, very different as an economy than we are. And when it came into the WTO in 2001, there were expectations that it would just automatically become like us. And that hasn't been the case. So we are at a moment in time where we have to figure out how it is that we're going to get along and whether we need new rules and new systems to deal with that. My concern, though, with the Trump administration's approach with this national security case, as we've talked about, the main targets of this thing, if they impose import restrictions, are not going to be China. We already stopped the steel imports from China from coming into the United States. So we're going to hit Germany, Japan, Canada, our allies, who are currently our allies, but who may then turn into our adversaries and not be willing to work with us vis-a-vis China in this particular instance. So that is my major concern here, is we have this fundamental underlying issue that we have to address, which is China, but we need our allies to work with us to make it work.
Anna, what's the way out of this? Or are we just headed down this path?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that question. That's probably the most difficult question of the hour.
Sure.
Well, I mean, you know, obviously it is an incredibly thorny question. And the administration feels that it, you know, it. We have tried a lot of measures specifically targeting China, you know, that we have restricted Chinese steel, and that approach hasn't worked. I mean, I do, you know, speaking to a lot of people who look at this sector very closely, there was a lot of hope that President Trump could perhaps work with other countries at the G20 meeting that happened just a few weeks ago in Europe. And, you know, that appeared to be, you know, not the case. And so now the U.S. is moving forward on more unilateral action.
High, high stakes, about as high as they get. Leo Gerard, do you think we're going to see the 232 button hit here by the Trump administration? Are we going to go down this road?
I think it's going to be a well thought out report. And I think that Secretary Ross is going to make it clear that the folks that are challenging America's national security are those countries that aren't playing by the rules. I don't think he's going to go after China. I don't think he's going to go after Europe.
We're out of time right there. Leo Gerard, International President of the United Steelworkers, thank you very much. Anna Swanson, Washington Post, Chad Bown, Peterson Institute. Our eyes are wide open now. Thank you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.